Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
And Mark Nagy's new book chronicles the decade of dysfunction at Tennessee, and he joins us here on the Midday 180. Hey, Mark, how are you?
Hey, good afternoon, guys. How are you doing?
We are great.
So, Mark, there's so many different directions we can go with this. I never thought that I would be one of the people that said you need to hire a Tennessee person for a job because that's what's needed. But when you look at Philip Fulmer now at Tennessee, given the last decade, it's maybe the first time I've thought to myself, boy, this is absolutely what Tennessee needs right now. Someone that you have no doubt has Tennessee athletics' best interest in mind at all times.
No, I agree with you 100%. I think that the issue with fans over the past 10 years is that they felt that, you know, I think frankly that they cared more about the program than the people that were in charge of the program. I think that, you know, that was part of the issue with Dave Hart in his tumultuous 5.5 years as the AD. I think that that was part of the issue with Derek Dooley and Butch Jones. They didn't win enough as well as the football coaches. But to have Phil Fulmer, a Tennessee legend, a guy that had won a national championship and two SEC titles as the Tennessee football coach, a guy that had spent 34 of the previous 40 years of his adult life on that campus before he was fired in 2008, having that guy in charge of the program really brings the much-needed stability to that athletic department that has been severely lacking.
Mark, there's a great excerpt at Gridiron Now, and I know you're a contributor over there, about the Vanderbilt game that was the death of Derek Dooley. And Bob Shoup telling Andre Howell he was going to have two interceptions and tell another player he's going to have a sack, and that's exactly what happened. I don't know if anything can embody just how bad Tennessee football has been in the last 10 years, then thinking of that Bob Shoup that was able to coach that Vandy defense and call his shot, and then juxtapose that with the Bob Shoup that Tennessee got and overpaid for when he got to Knoxville. I mean, try to connect the dots on how that was possible and how Tennessee got the Bob Shoup that worked under Butch Jones.
You know, and it's interesting because when Derek Dooley hired Sal Sanceri as his defense coordinator, that was the end of the Dooley era. And when that happened, because 2012 was a complete disaster. When Bob Shoup was hired in 2016, Dribble John Jancic, it was pretty much universally applauded. I mean, there were very few people that thought that this was a bad hire. You know, he had done well at Vandy, certainly. He had done well at Penn State. He knew the SEC from his time at Vandy, knew Tennessee, knew that recruiting. So it seemed like a perfect fit. But it kind of makes sense when you look at what's happened at Tennessee football in recent years, that that hire had the best intentions, but that Bob Shoup defense looked nothing like the defenses you saw with the Commodores or the Nittany Lions.
You can grab Mark Nagy's new book online at Amazon, Decade of Dysfunction. Mark, where were you on Sunday, November 26th of last year?
I was at home. I was paying attention to Twitter, as I normally do, because I'm kind of addicted to Twitter. And when Dan Wolkin and Bruce Feldman started tweeting that Tennessee was closing in on Schiano, that, you know, these weren't just rumors anymore, I was transfixed by paying attention to social media, because what you saw then over the next few hours that afternoon into the early evening was a protest that was fairly organic in nature. This wasn't really organized. It was just something that fans immediately felt that they had to find a way to get their voices heard. And they did that on social media. They did that to John Curry's email and cell phone. It got so bad in the thousands of messages that came in that John Curry had to get a different cell phone the next day. that's just remarkable. I mean, what I said about this, about that Sunday, is that you haven't seen anything like that in college athletics before, and I don't know if you'll ever see anything like that in the years to come. That hire was done. It was pretty much all signed, sealed, and delivered. Even the MOU had been signed by some of the parties, John Curry and Greg Schiano. I mean, they were going to have a press conference that night. There was no reason to think that that wasn't going to happen, but the protest just kept going and going and going, and Tennessee had no choice but to pull the offer.
I've thought that a great coffee table book would be a transcript of just the text that went to his phone when his number was put out there on social media from November 26th on. You know, like the 100 pages of whatever was released is just fans texting him. I would love to just have it in big font where you could just turn page to page and read every single one of them.
If you were to try and make up what had surrounded Tennessee's athletic program over the past 10 years, if you didn't know anything about Tennessee athletics, and you're supposed to make, nobody would believe it. I mean, that Sunday was just finally the final spark. I said it almost had nothing to do with Greg Schiano. It's just that was the last straw to Tennessee fans. I mean, nobody's texting John Curry. Very few people are texting angry, threatening messages if they hired Jeff Brohm or Mike Norvell or Chad Morris or whoever it would have been. But the Schiano thing really struck a chord in people because he was on no one's hot board in that coaching cycle at all. It's like when they hired Derek Dooley in 2010, they were down to like option, you know, G-H-I, because they kept getting turned down by everybody. What we've learned was that Curry wanted to hire Dan Mullen, and when Florida took him, they said, okay, we'll go with Schiano. I mean, he was their second choice, when, honestly, if they'd gotten down to their 10th, 11th, 12th choice, they still could have gotten Greg Schiano.
Mark Nagy, our guest, the book, Decade of Dysfunction.
Let's go back to the beginning of that Decade of Dysfunction. The contrast in the Philip Fulmer press conference, where he was emotional and he was no longer going to be the coach, and how that was handled, as opposed to Lane Kiffin leaving at night in that press conference, which I know you were a part of as well. That, I think, sums up a lot of things with Tennessee football over that period as well.
Yeah, and you know, when Phil Fulmer was fired in 2008, he had that classic line, I'm maybe paraphrasing a little bit of the exact verbiage, but it was, you know, I love Tennessee too much to let her stay divided. And at that moment, you know, the Tennessee fans who didn't realize just how connected he was to university, they finally felt that. And then 13 and a half months later, you know, Lane Kiffin has that, you know, absolute mess of a press conference. And if anyone has never seen the behind the scenes video, I suggest going to YouTube and finding it, because it is absolutely classic the way that the Knoxville media had interfighting that night, because Lane Kiffin pops up and says, yeah, I don't want cameras rolling on the first part. I mean, that's an entire story to itself. I mean, you couldn't have two polar opposites. That's what's been interesting, too, guys, is that Phil Fulmer to Lane Kiffin, completely opposite guys. Lane Kiffin to Derek Dooley, completely opposite guys. And to a greater deal, you know, Dooley to Butch Jones and Butch Jones to Jeremy Pruitt. It's like they keep trying to find the winning formula, and Tennessee fans certainly hope that having Jeremy Pruitt, a guy who's probably a little bit more like Fulmer than any of those other guys, I hope that also brings back some of that Fulmer success.
Mark, in writing about the Dooley years and you being around it and just knowing sort of how he went about his business, if you had to put your finger on one reason why Derek Dooley was just an utter failure as Tennessee head coach, what was that one reason with him?
Derek Dooley was more concerned with things off the field at times than he was actually X's and O's in recruiting and the main responsibilities as the football coach. When Tennessee was expanding their indoor complex, he basically looked at the plan. They were, you know, getting started with that. And he goes, no, I don't like this. And they changed everything around. And I've always said, if he was a little bit more concerned with actually getting out there and recruiting and maybe realizing that a player like Jalen Ramsey, you know, was actually in his state, and not just trying to send a grad assistant to talk to him. Von Bell, you know, a guy who wanted to go to Tennessee, and Dooley and that staff didn't even give him an extra look. I mean, there were so many of those things during the Dooley era that when you could then go back and look at it, it's really not a surprise that he went 4-19 in SEC play. And that's really hard to do at a place like Tennessee. I mean, no matter what situation you're in, imagine that, going 4-19 in conference play. It's really quite remarkable.
When you go back and you look at the hires by Mike Hamilton, the two hires by Mike Hamilton, the hire of Butch Jones by Dave Hart, and then the botched hiring of Greg Schiano by John Curry. In most of those cases, Tennessee was on, I think you said, the G, H, and I options on their list, other than what Curry was doing. When you look back and look at those athletic directors, do you think it was Tennessee not being that great of a job at the time, or was it also a combination of these guys just not being able to close when they got in front of some of these coaches, and a more competent athletic director maybe could have landed one of these big names out there?
Well, I think what we learned was that the days where the Tennessees, the Michigans, the LSUs of the world can just go and get whoever they want, those days are gone, because now every program has money because of the TV contracts. Everybody has facilities because of the TV contracts. I made this comparison in the book. You know, if you're David Cutcliffe, you know, and you're making, you know, around $2 million, you know, at Duke, why would you go anywhere else? There's no pressure to win there. You enjoy the Raleigh area. You have a great work-life balance for your family. And, you know, you see pictures of Cutcliffe with his grandkids out on social media. There's no reason to go anywhere else. And unless you're willing to absurdly overpay, you know, it's hard to get those guys that you want. And that doesn't even always work. I mean, Texas, how many times did they try to get Nick Saban, offer him $10, $11, $12 million, you know, back when he was making 6 or 7? It still didn't work out. So I think that that's what happened. I think that Mike Hamilton and Dave Hart learned the hard way that just having a quote-unquote football blue blood on your resume to try and get a hire for doesn't necessarily guarantee you're going to get the guy you want.
You mentioned before that Tennessee's fan base did something and pulled off something that may never happen again, in essentially stopping a hire on social media on that Sunday. And I agree with you on that. What do you think the state of the Tennessee fan base is right now? I've compared it before to, with Philip Fulmer at the wheel, you feel like you're on a road trip and grandpappy's at the wheel and you're asleep in the back seat and driving throughout the night. That's sort of the sense I get from Tennessee fans with Philip Fulmer now at the controls. But overall, where do you think this fan base is with Jeremy Pruitt and Philip Fulmer in charge?
I think the Tennessee fans are as satisfied with the Fulmer-Pruitt combo as they've been pretty much at any time since Fulmer was fired in November of 2008. Fulmer has talked about wanting to have everyone pulling in the same direction, and I think fans feel that that's actually the case right now. Now, doesn't mean that Tennessee is going to start winning SEC titles again. You know, who knows? I mean, Jeremy Pruitt has never actually been a head coach in football. So, and it's really difficult to get over that final rung of the ladder in the SEC during the Saban era. But I think the Tennessee fans, for the most part, I talked to so many for the book, and I don't think I talked to one person that felt that the hiring of Phil Fulmer was a bad thing. One of the guys I interviewed for the book was David Blackburn. And I'm a David Blackburn guy. I thought that Tennessee should have given him more of a look when they hired John Curry as AD. And Blackburn said, when I asked him what he thought about when all the Schiano-Curry stuff was going on, and then Curry was fired, he says, "Well, I don't understand why they didn't hire Phil Fulmer in the first place." And he's right. I mean, yeah. if you just hire Phil Fulmer in the first place, just about every Tennessee fan, if you hire Fulmer or Blackburn, almost all Tennessee fans are supportive of those moves. And they hired Curry, and he had a honeymoon period for a while, and he brought back the Lady Vols name change, and everything was sunshine and puppy dogs. But then the moment that they lost that Florida game in 2017, then both Butch Jones and John Curry got on the hot seat immediately, and they never got off of it.
Mark Nagy is the author of Decade of Dysfunction, The Road to Tennessee's Crazy Coaching Search. Mark, thank you for the time, man. We appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Mark.
Absolutely, guys. Have a great day.
Yep, and be sure to grab that book at Amazon.com. It's available right now. The price, Chad, no coincidence, 1998.
It's important. It's an important year, Hud. It was a great year.